After years of debate and discussion, New Jersey is now officially on the path to a $15 minimum wage. On the path, that's a key phrase in all this, too, because knowing this as fact, what should a business be reviewing and preparing for? Could assumed easy-to-institute changes buffer a business against the increased costs regarding payroll? Do employment policies and agreements need to be reviewed in any way? The first guest today joins us to review and explain what's associated with this issue. He is a partner in the Labor and Employment Group law firm, Seyfarth Shaw Howard Wexler. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. Good morning, everybody.
And the website for Howard's law firm is Seyfarth, Seyfarth.com. Yes, we do have a link over at our site as well. Let's just start by getting to, I think, probably the most important point. This isn't a flip of a switch from 0 to 15. This is more like if you're staring at your stove and you start turning up the temperature and the flame a little bit at a time. Of course, the flame's rising up on the businesses of New Jersey in this case, which nevertheless is not going to make many of them happy, but that is the case of how this is going. It's going to be in stages and increments, not in a one big short burst.
Yeah, that's correct. I think, you know, the getting New Jersey's minimum wage up to $15 per hour was something that there was some movement on back, you know, during Governor Christie's tenure. It stalled, and then Governor Murphy, it was one of his big campaign promises. So there was a lot of debate for, you know, the better part of several years about how to phase this in. Because going from the current minimum wage of, you know, $8.85 up to $15 an hour overnight, you know, would shock the system for a lot of employers. So, you know, the phased approach that they chose to go here with in New Jersey was starting with the first wave of increases on July 1st of this year, of 2019. And then after that, increases January 1st of each year. And, you know, really going through 2026 is when the phased approach kind of ends in terms of legislation. But when different type of employers hit that $15 per hour varies. So, you know, the first group of employees that will hit $15 per hour are, you know, employees who work for large employers, which under the statute is defined as those who employers who have more than six employees. You know, those folks aren't hitting $15 until January 1st, 2024. So come July 1st of this year, those folks are going up to $10 an hour, then $11 in January of 2020, and $1 each year up until they hit $15. And then there's different carve-outs for small employees, agricultural, farm, and tipped employees and the like. So it's phased in over time. You know, one thing that some folks were looking for was in New York, when they phased in this minimum wage, they not only broke it down over the course of many years, but they kind of divided the state up into different areas, because what $15 for, you know, is in New York City is different than in what it is in Buffalo and other places. You know, New Jersey opted to go with just a full statewide approach, but still tried to phase it in so that, you know, employers can get used to it and plan for it over the next, you know, 5 to 7 years, depending on when it hits in for you.
Looking at the breakdown, too, I noticed that certainly in New Jersey, one of the heaviest portions of employment is in the service industry. Was that why tip credit and tipped employees got their own special classification?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, the tipped minimum wage is something that's been getting a lot of publicity, and it's stayed in New Jersey. It's been $2.13 an hour for quite a while. So, you know, that they're keeping the tipped minimum wage. So if you work for a restaurant and you collect tips, you can get the, some people refer to it as a sub-minimum wage of $2.13 an hour. So that's still going to stay the same right now, but then that, starting July, will go up 50 cents to $2.63, and then that's going to keep on increasing up until it hits $5.13 per hour in January of 2022. But the key for that is just to make sure that the employees still need to get paid whatever the applicable minimum wage is, but employers just need to make sure that those employees are getting the tips to cover the difference. You know, there's some debate about whether to do away with that sub-minimum wage altogether. That's happened in some places in New York right now. That's something that the governor is signaling that he's interested in doing. But New Jersey decided to keep that sub-minimum wage for service employees who customarily get tips. But employers just now need to be on the lookout to make sure that the tips that the employees are getting still bring them up to the applicable minimum wage. It's just the employer is only responsible for that smaller number, with the tips making up the difference.
Perhaps for students and recent graduates, the training programs and the training wage has been an important part of New Jersey. It's also been on the low end of the scale in a lot of ways, too, because, well, it doesn't exist, quite frankly, but now it's been instituted. How is that going to break down as far as a training wage is concerned with all these increases and the respective increments?
Sure. So that's something that, you know, part of it's to be determined, because under the new law, beginning January 1st, 2020, employers can pay new hires enrolled in established employer training programs a training wage, which is, you know, 90% of whatever the applicable regular minimum wage is for their first 120 hours of work, you know, provided that the new hire has no previous or similar related experience. The Commissioner of Labor and Workforce Development in New Jersey is going to be issuing regulations defining what meets a training program. So it's not going to be something that you as an employer can say, oh, well, someone's new to this job, I'm going to pay them the training wage for their first, you know, 3 months, 4 months of work. There's going to be some pretty strict guidelines in terms of what constitutes a training program, and we expect those to come out shortly. But that's going to be, you know, they could pay 90% of whatever the applicable minimum wage is. And then there's other exemptions as well for college, university students and the like. But, you know, that's something that, again, there's going to be regulations coming out to give some more guidance on those points.
And on the flip side, on the later end of the timetable for agricultural workers, still to be determined is how fast they get to a maximum $15 minimum as well. We're talking with Howard Wexler, who's a partner in the Labor and Employment Group law firm. Seyfarth Shaw, Seyfarth, SeyfarthSeyfarth.com is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Taking all this into account, especially for the smaller businesses, and a lot of businesses say, well, I have 12 employees, but I'm always solving myself as a small business too, but yeah, let's look at those like 10 to 24 employee businesses. They might be thinking, well, I've got this much budgeted. Let's just say $250,000 for salary. And I'm looking ahead. I have to either increase my prices, cut hours, or cut employees. When they are looking at those options, what are some of the precautions and points that you have to really study and make sure that they're going to be on a legal sound foundation?
Sure. I mean, those are the considerations. And, you know, with respect to the small employers, you know, if you tell someone who has seven employees that they're deemed a large employer, that would be surprising to them. You know, the working version of the statute initially had 10 as the threshold, and that's similar to what it is in some places. Here, they decided to go with 6 was the compromise that was reached, which is, you know, pretty small in my view, because 7-8 employees, that's still a pretty small employer, to your point. You know, I think what employers should be looking at now is, to your point, there's fixed budgets in terms of what they have for expenses. So starting to see, you know, everyone's trying to do more with less. So I think seeing where there might be some fat in terms of how you have scheduling done to try to trim the schedules, because, you know, these increases are going to happen. And there's no, you know, exception for part-time, you know, regular employees. The issue is that, you know, you may want to say, well, we have one employee who's working 60 hours a week, and that person is making overtime for those, you know, 20 hours above 40, so maybe it's cheaper to use two people and keep those below overtime. So, I mean, that's something to consider. You know, another thing to consider is, you know, this impacts not just those employees who are getting paid the minimum wage, but also, you know, those who are getting above it. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's something, at least I know in some of these states where the increase in minimum wage has gone up, where there's a wage compression aspect of this, where you may have a manager who's making X amount of money, and if you're bringing up the lower paid employees, you know, the manager may say, hey, wait a second, I have all these additional responsibilities, and now the wages are compressed between your workforce. So I think it's something that you need to look at your, you know, total workforce, not just, you know, those who might be impacted directly by the minimum wage. Because, you know, at the same time, you know, you have a human resource aspect of this and just a management aspect that you want to make sure all of your employees feel like they're being compensated fairly. And to make sure that if someone's supervising people and they have, in essence, the same wage or close to it, you know, you may have to then give that manager or that supervisor or that more senior person a bump as well. So, I mean, I think it's something that a lot of employers are going to have to sit down and have some hard conversations with themselves and their business models, you know, and whether that means shifting to more of an independent contractor model if you're able to do that. There are strict tests for whether someone's an independent contractor versus an employee. But again, that's something that, you know, I think from a lot of employers, given while it's phased in, this is going to be a big change. You know, everything has to be on the table in order to figure out how to deal with this increase.
Looking at businesses of any size, from the employees in the low teens to the employees in the hundreds, a lot of cases there are sometimes basic, sometimes detailed employment agreements you sign, just so everyone knows by definition what the story is for both sides of the situation. If that's the case, no matter how general the employment agreement is, if it says the word full-time, can you legally, through based on employment laws, cut someone part-time?
Yeah, I mean, although there's not some sort of guarantee that you have with the person, if someone's generally been hired as a full-time employee, you know, typically, you know, in New Jersey's no different, you know, in terms of an at-will employment state. So, you know, you could cut somebody to a part-time type arrangement. You know, that obviously has an impact on whether that person can keep the job or not, because they may need the hours. But, you know, I think that might be something to consider in terms of restricting those hours. Especially, you know, once you're factoring in if those are getting over 40, you know, the overtime rate, a time and a half, is going to be a pretty large number for what a lot of employers are used to.
And, of course, another out, too, for businesses, if they want to curb the cost and make sure they get 8 hours for 8 hours pay, they can eliminate breaks, shorten lunches, and do a few other things that makes 8 hours equal 8 hours, not 7 hours and 15 minutes or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to your point, there's you know, everything, at least the employers that I've been dealing with, in New Jersey, especially for the past year or so, there's been a lot of changes. You know, the governor ran on a platform of a lot of changes in terms of the employer-employee dynamic. So one of the first things he did was, you know, pass a statewide paid sick leave, which went into effect on October 29th of last year. You know, there's a pay equity bill that was signed that's one of the more toughest in the laws. So now this minimum wage, and there's some other legislation pending that we've written about on our website that's pending in New Jersey. So I think employers should continue to remain on high alert, given a lot of these new laws and really changing the business model for a lot of employers and having to take a look at, you know, maybe you've been doing something the same way for the past 10, 20 years. You may need to, you know, change that given some of these added costs that you now have to pay.
At least the one benefit for the business is that, in this case, time is on their side because this is, as we said, the start incremental, not one big flip of a switch, and then all of a sudden, bam.
Yeah, that's 100% right. I mean, it could have been a quicker. So I think that was part of that compromise in terms of, you know, whether small employers are at 6 or at 10 was the idea of, you know, maybe let's stretch it out a bit longer so that it only goes up $1 per year. Until it gets to 15 for large employers, and then you know, progressively gets to 15 for most other employees, you know, up until 2026. So I think that's right, that you can at least do some planning, because at this point, you know, it's set out, you know, going forward the next at least 7 years for what the wage increase will be for the minimum wage.
And as businesses owner, you can imagine the importance of information, knowledge, and guidance. One of those resources is the law firm Seyfarth Shaw. You can find out more about their services, their focus on this issue at Seyfarth, Seyfarth.com. We have a link over on our page as well. We've been talking with a partner in the Labor and Employment Group law firm, Seyfarth Shaw, Howard Wexler. Howard, thanks for explaining what was, for I think many, a confusing situation. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for the time. I really appreciate it and enjoyed our talk.